Hello, everyone. Welcome to Contact Lost Podcast, definitely the best Polish English speaking podcast out there. We talk about Warhammer 40K, competitive Warhammer 40K, mainly about competitive Warhammer 40K in Poland, but we always talk about the international context as well. We talk about lists, tournaments, we invite players from all around the globe, which you probably will experience in a second. And if this is your first time with us, please stay tuned for more, because I will have many interesting guests, like the guest today, like the guest last time. If you haven't seen our previous episode, we have started a series called My 40K Job. This is a series that I hope you find interesting, because many people tell me that they are no longer interested in playing 9th edition, so probably also not very much interested in Warhammer 40K content that is not related to the 10th edition. However, I'm doing my best, we are doing our best, to bring you some different form of content. And My 40K Job is exactly that. I invite people from all walks of life, but people who have managed to turn their passion, their love for the hobby, into a profession, into, as I mentioned last time, a money-making enterprise. And we go into the details of how that works, how that happened, what it takes to actually be successful. And, you know, maybe this inspires someone to do exactly that, or maybe this introduces you to some people and concepts that you did not know. So, yeah. By the way, I always forget to mention this at the beginning. I always leave it to the end, and I'm sure nobody gets to that point, so I'll mention it now. We are on YouTube, we are on Spotify, we are on Apple Podcasts, all the other kinds of streaming media. And as of next week, if Joker doesn't fail me, my co-host, we will be doing our best to do these episodes live. So he's sorting out software for himself, he's sorting out his mic, lighting in his flat, because so far he didn't have that, and we shall see. So please do like, please subscribe, please click the bell button or whatever you have there to click that gives you a notification when we are about to go live, because next week probably this will finally happen. We also have a blog that I try to post to regularly, so please check it out by following the link in the description of this video or and in any other media. And okay, with all that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I am joined today by the man, the myth, the legend, the brown magic, Mr. Nick Nanavati himself. Welcome, Nick.
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much for that. How are you doing?
I'm great. As I mentioned in our short pre-show interview, I usually do this without a script, but today I won't be hiding this. I'm absolutely starstruck. I have been a big fan of you for the longest time. I have watched your, you know, videos, listened to your podcast. I've seen your report from the WTC and so on and so on. And I just admire what you do. So for me, today is like a celebration, really.
That really means a lot, Solomon. I don't know if I can live up to the hype, but I hopefully will. In any case, I'm honored to be here and I'm happy to be here.
And I'm happy. We are happy to have you here. So Nick is here because, as I mentioned, we are doing this the second episode of My 40K Job series. And you might ask why, because, well, if you don't know who Nick is and you've been hiding under a rock, Nick is running a company. He's running a group of services, I'll call it, The Art of War, where they offer, well, they have a YouTube channel, they offer coaching, they have a podcast. There's a group of people that we're going to talk about in a moment, and Nick is at the helm leading this. Now, you might ask, why are we doing yet another episode about coaching? Because the previous one that we did with Innes was also about coaching. But I assure you, Nick Nanavati and The Art of War is something else. It is... I even need to look for words to describe that. I think it's a phenomenon. I think it's something absolutely extraordinary and awesome, as awesome as, I don't know, the Undertaker's 21 victory streak in the WWE. or like, I don't know, like the all-star team in the NBA, and everyone likes to watch those games with that team. So we're talking that caliber. It is more than coaching. It is more than a podcast. It is more than just a group of guys playing 40K together. So Nick is here, hopefully, to talk about all of that in detail from start to finish. So Nick, like in case of Innes, like with the in the previous episode that we did, I'll kick off with the sort of same job interview-esque question. Like, what are your qualifications to be a coach? I know it's awkward, but yeah, what are your
that's awesome.
To be a coach, to be a manager of it all? Like, you know, let's introduce you first.
All right, I'll tell you a tale. So I started playing Warhammer when I was 10 years old. I got into it in fifth grade elementary school. My teacher played Warhammer, and he had a club for the kids to play after school, and all my friends wanted to play. So I actually got peer pressured into playing Warhammer. I wasn't that interested. But then from there, I found a local store, maybe 15, 20 minute drive from my house. My parents were kind enough to just like drop me off. They got free daycare out of it. And I just grew up around Warhammer, like hanging out in a game store, made a lot of friends that way. How I really became intertwined with the Warhammer community and my small little microcosm of it. And then I just enjoyed playing. I was terrible, like truly terrible. Don't get me wrong. I was no childhood prodigy. As a 10-year-old, probably through like 14, 15, really bad. And then I was just going to tournaments. Like they had RTTs every 3 months. That was the big deal back then. Like 20 people tournaments in a store every 3 months was like good. So I would go to those. Eventually I started winning them, you know, just by sheer willpower, trying to get better. And not with like the grandiose goal of starting Art of War with all that, just wanted to get better. And as I got a little older, I started like taking weekend trips with my friends to a tournament, maybe an hour or two away that's a little larger. And if I found out I was pretty decent at the game, I was like doing well in my region, that kind of thing. So as I got to like college, university, when I hit 18, I flew across the country or halfway to Adepticon, one of the largest tournaments at the time in America, and actually won that. It was one of my first super majors, and I took that thing down. So that's when I started to really get some recognition and notoriety. I qualified for Team America ETC back then. And I played on ETC from 2012 to 2018 on Team America, or 2017 on Team America, and that was the year that we actually won the event as Team America. I've also played for Team England on 2018. We won that as well. I won the ITC season in 2017. I won Adepticon 4 times and Nova Invitational 3 times. I got second place in the singles. The resume goes on. But over time, I basically transitioned. During all of this, I was in school studying. I got a degree in supply chain management of all things. And I got a boring business job at Revlon, which is a women's cosmetics company. They make makeup. I was doing Excel Monkey data stuff while I was building up a Warhammer presence. And I really hated my job. Really, really hated it. So eventually I left my job and I decided to just start a Warhammer business right on the back of winning ITC. So in theory, I was crowned best player in the world for a time. And I used that to launch a little blog where I tried to produce information about Warhammer, like tactics and stuff, how to wrap something, how to try point something, little stuff like that. And it really got traction. So I was wondering if people would be interested in my list advice. So I started offering free list advice through an email address. And this was thebrownmagic.com. So it was quite a time ago. I got flooded with emails, full lists. So then I was like, maybe I could charge something for these lists. I'd never seen anyone charge money for Warhammer advice before. So this was kind of unprecedented. So I started real small with $3 per list. And I still got flooded. So I raised my prices to $5, and then $10, and then $15, and $25. And through fumbling around and sheer willpower, I decided I have something real here. I'm going to try to make Warhammer my career. And I didn't really have qualifications. All my only qualifications were that I actually went to business school, not for this, but went to business school, and I was really good at Warhammer. So I've developed endless amount of school skills to run this business. I partnered with my buddy Richard Siegler. He's just a guy I met at a Warhammer tournament. We played a game. We had an amazing game of Warhammer. I was looking to expand beyond just myself as a Warhammer coach mm-hmm. and really build up a team. And I told him about my Art of War vision and I asked him to be a part of it. And he basically was like, yeah, can you move to Florida? Which was across the country for me. So I took the chance. I just packed my stuff, moved across the country, started a business with this guy I met over a game of Warhammer. And 4 years later, we are doing it.
Okay, that's a hell of a story. I mean, yeah, but my one of the questions was like, how do you go from just a hobby to I'm going to start a business? Because, you know, it's not that easy. Well, easy. I wouldn't even say that it was easy for you, but it's not.
Anything walk in the park. Don't let me mislead you.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like in case of Venus, I mentioned this in the previous episode that it must take absolute balls of steel to make a move like that. Now, so did it work from the very beginning? Or let me ask this maybe. You said that it was successful from the start, and even despite the price that you've set, people were still coming to you. Was that like a market niche that you spotted? Like, was there real demand for it? And if so, why hasn't anyone done this before?
So I think it's a combination of right place, right time, and willingness to act is most like actually doing something entrepreneurial is. And it's all relative too. Like the numbers I was getting would be like single digit people watching my stream. 13 people watched my stream. I had one person pay me $300 for 3 months of coaching. And that was the first coaching client I ever took on. I never even thought about coaching. I was just selling lists for like $3 each. Mm-hmm. I'm like spinning my tires. Like 20 lists is like an entire day's worth of Warhammer work at a Starbucks. And you made $60. So like, no, this wasn't sustainable. Mm-hmm. But it was passion. I was very passionate about it. And I didn't know how to start. I have a business plan and a business model. So I just started the way I could start with the skills I had and just was really open to opportunity, really open to talking to people and refining my ideas and learning and really trying to figure out how to make it work. So in a way, it's just a blind leap of faith that you'll figure it out.
Sounds like an American dream.
Right. If you're relentless about it, all I can say is if you find your way. So that one guy I mentioned, he paid me $300 for 3 months of coaching. He was really, I would say, inspirational to me. Because it was like, man, if somebody's out there who's willing to pay me $300 for 3 months of coaching, which looking back on it now, I charge much more than those prices. Mm-hmm. But that was the inspiration I took to just get it going. It's like, there's a real market here. I can find this. I can make it work. And then the idea kind of formed itself. I realized coaching as a business model is really time intensive, very hard to scale that. So I tried to expand more to like a subscription style service, which doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out the very basic concept of a subscription style business model, and then just try to fill your content so that people have something to subscribe to. Promote yourself. Like I went on Facebook groups. I went onto every podcast that would possibly listen to me, kind of like I'm doing now. And just through sheer doing it, it's amazing how much time you have if you just dedicate yourself to something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then, you know, obviously the quality goes up as well because you can devote all that time to it. So you teamed up with Richard. You moved to Florida. How did you go about getting more clients and about building a brand? Like, did you, I don't know, decide, okay, let's both pitch in and spend some money on marketing? Or was it like more by word of mouth because you knew all the people in the competitive scene already anyway? How did you go about, you know, getting more clients?
For years, it was entirely organic. I mean, it started with me just self-promoting on whatever Facebook group I could find or whatever thing I could find to self-promote on. And a lot of people would just sign up just to support rather than actually consume the content because our production quality was terrible. I mean, like, truly terrible. Like, it was my phone duct taped to a pole trying to film an entire table for a battle report.
You have to start somewhere, sir.
You got to start somewhere, exactly. I had like 8 viewers, but that was better than nothing, you know? So basically, from there, we really leaned into the fact that I was really well connected. I've been playing the game for 20 years at this point, well, today's age, so maybe 15 years back then. And I knew all the people that were to know, at least in the American scene, some people in the abroad scene, and I had some reach. So I really leaned into that as hard as I could. And that got us off the ground. You know, we could keep the lights on. I would say that's how much money we were making, how much reach we had. But then we expanded our team. We had one of Richard's former teammates on Team Brohammer, John Lennon. He came on because he was graduating college, and he was like, well, I need a job. And we were like, John, you want to go play Warhammer for a job? And he said, yeah. So then John was on the team. We got Mark on the team.
I've listened to your episode not so long ago. I think about, I don't know if that was released 3 weeks ago. I definitely listened to it.
It was like two, 3 weeks ago with John Lennon.
Yeah, with John Lennon, exactly. Like he talked about his career and getting on the team and so on. If anyone hasn't listened to that yet, go to Art of War and listen. It's a really fun, really entertaining, really insightful episode that I can recommend. But we will do plugs probably at the end anyway.
Appreciate it. So, absolutely.
So we can actually use this to segue to my next question. How did you, again, you paired with Lennon, you organically started building a client base, and then I understand that you were looking to expand the team. So how did you go about it? Like, was there any key that you and Richard decided on? Like, we need a guy who plays this faction, or we need a guy who does this, or like, how did you build a team?
We valued core values over everything else. Like, the way I view it, and this is still how I view it if you were to apply to Art of War like it's a job today, is like playing Warhammer and being good at Warhammer is your prerequisite. That's like, I mean, being in a good faction is like being a specialist in something, but that's still a prerequisite. It, much like if I was to go into a like doctor's office and ask for a job, I have to know about medical stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's a prerequisite. Beyond that, I look for sportsmanship. I look for someone's ability to represent the brand. Because one thing that's just true in this game, and even more so as the internet evolves and things like that, is that the everybody knows each other. The hobby is so tight-knit, and I love it for the community aspect. So one that's really important to me and my core values as a person, as the leader, but it's also, if you get caught cheating, if you get caught doing something scandalous, the internet is quick to crucify and slow to, you know, forgive. So I need to make sure I fill my roster with people who are not only going to fill the checkboxes of good at Warhammer, able to teach Warhammer. Those are skills you can learn, honestly. The core values, who you are, your honesty, the character, your integrity, that matters a lot more to me. And I take that super seriously as I actually coach my own team, because the pressure gets to you when you have three ITC championships as a team back-to-back-to-back to live up to, and you have myself as an ITC champion, Richard Siegler back-to-back ITC champions, Jack Harpster ITC champion, multiple every super major winner. You can feel the pressure, especially when you start to lose games. And it's, you have to separate yourself from your ego in that regard. And that's really important to us.
That's great. And do you, like, does the team operate as a family? Or, I mean, you know, a family that will always stay together? Or is it more like a, I don't know, football team or a basketball team where you will be looking for new talent, for new skills, and maybe releasing some talent at some point? Like, what's your approach?
So that's a really great question. I mean, we definitely operate in a family-like environment. You know, like we during COVID times, we were all stuck together and celebrated Christmas together. I mean, when Jack won ITC this past year, me and him go way back. We used to play in my basement back in New Jersey. We'd known each other for like 15, 20 years. And like, I literally burst into tears as he won ITC. It was a whole emotional moment. So like, there's definitely like real love there and all that between all of us. There's also, we get on each other's nerves relentlessly. You know, it's absurd. But we're all in our 20s, except Ziggs, he's old. You know, if we decide to go a different direction with our life, I'm not going to hold it against you. Like, it's okay.
Okay. And tell me, because I've heard, I think from, well, on your podcast, also on, Adam Camilleri's podcast. Yeah, Adam Camilleri has been your guest to the Art of War house. You've mentioned that during COVID, you've spent a lot of time together and so on. So tell us about the Art of War house. How does this work? I mean, you know, one of the things that I was always wondering, like, is, you know, how it works. Who cleans,
I suppose there's so much mystery around the street.
Yeah, like, can't, you know, if I came to the to the Art of War house today, would I see, I don't know, Richard Ziegler on the vacuum cleaner, or like John with a Kiss the Cook apron and actually making scrambled eggs? Or
there have been times where you would see these things.
Okay.
You really would. Okay, so the Art of War house has evolved, and like who lives in it and where it is has changed over time. It used to just be a really crappy apartment. Again, I moved to Florida on a whim. And then through time and endless relentlessness here, we've been able to upgrade a little bit. So now we rent a house in Florida. It's decently large, because we needed it for the stream space as well as living space. So the master bedroom has been completely converted into a stream area along with a couple other rooms of the house. And then we have two separate bedrooms, one in which I live in, one in which Richard lives in. And our girlfriends are always here, so it's just weird. And then John and Jack are key employees. They're like Christmas, our core employees as well as our teammates. So they're in here 5-6 days a week easy, just coming in and out as they please. We have contractors coming in and then coming out for a variety of different things. So like we live in this house. It's almost communal because there's so many people in and out of it. It's a terrible separation of work-life balance, but you got to find your way.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And it's incredibly convenient because my commute is through my kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, I am familiar with the concept because it is not unprecedented, especially in the world like esports and gaming, that teams either rent a house or some, like, you know, a boot camp area where they sleep together, live together, play together, train together, and so on and so on. But I think you have taken this to a whole new level. And I guess we could say that it paid off, right?
Well, I think so. It's definitely, it's a really effective way to do a startup, right? Like we cover, John and Jack live on their own just 15 minutes down the street, same with Mark. But largely speaking, we cover two people's cost of living plus the business's rent in one nice package. And it's so convenient in terms of it's a central location. It not only serves as the living space and place of work, but it's also the general central hangout spot. Like there's downtime. We just hang out. This is the spot.
Okay. So I need to ask this, and this is for a few reasons that I will reveal in a moment, but are all of you doing this full time, or do people have like other jobs as well?
Well, so it depends who you're asking about. Like the Art of War ITC team has about 12, 15 members on it total, and most people have other jobs. The full-time employees for Art of War are John, Richard, Jack, and myself. And we're actually just hiring a new person on Quentin very soon to be a video editor slash player. But then we have a bunch of other contract workers, and they're very, that's how we kind of get our faction specialists and a little brand representation in different countries. Like we have Matt Moore Sully over in Australia. And we have Matt Robertson in UK, and we have Raven Martinez, also known as Scary, up in Canada. So we're trying to, you know, and build upon those bridges as we get more and more resources.
Okay. So one of the reasons I'm asking about this, and why one of the reasons why I'm doing the my 40K job, is that there are a bunch of things that I myself would like to understand, and then I hope that others are interested in this as well. So one of the things that that always bugs me about this is, how do you view your future? So do you think that you could be doing this at the age of 50? Or like, is this, you know, you're going to be doing this up to a certain point, and then you're going to look for different opportunities, different endeavors, different jobs? Like, have you thought about this, or are you just, you know, carpe diem, sort of catching the day and enjoying the moment?
Oh, I think about it all of the time. And for me personally, it's a bit of column A and a little bit of column B. I don't want to be tethered to having to keep up with the meta of competitive Warhammer and chase tournament after tournament after tournament. It gets exhausting and strenuous on your lifestyle, all that travel can, and it's stressful just keeping up with the rate of rules that release. So like I look at it as seasonally. Seasonally, I'll perform, and seasonally, I'll really try to go out there and do it. Some seasons will take a little more lax approach, and that is the freedom I want to have within my life, to play Warhammer at the desired pace I want, because eventually a question I imagine we'll get to is like burnout. That's a real thing. You don't want to hate your hobby because you do it for a job. So I'm transitioning myself personally into a 40K content creator, a 40K coach, a 40K personality, a 40K player. Additionally, a business owner and a manager and things like that. And beyond that, I take time management very seriously and things like that. So I try to create scalable opportunities within my own time. So right now I don't have to play as much 40K. I have a team and I'm really focused on our business's growth within 10th edition launching in a month or two or 3 months or whatever it is. So that's when I'm really focusing on the business aspects. And 2-3 years down the line, who knows what I'll actually need to be focusing on that period of my life, as long as I create sustainable patterns behind me. So everything is kind of able to support itself.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So tell me, when you started this business, did you have all the, let's call them, out of lack of a better word, prerequisites in place already? Like, you know, the use of
applications, the use
of cameras. Right. So did that simply come with experience and you did your own research, or did you consult someone? Did you, you don't normally have like a set of cameras to start recording battle reports and so on. You usually start, as you said, with a shitty camera on a stick or something like that.
No, but yeah, I had like two armies, one of which was like really poorly painted, and I had my phone. That's how I started, in a laptop. That's how I started this business. From there, I started streaming, literally, I told you, with my phone duct taped to a pole. And then I talked to people about the most basics of streaming. Like, you know, a guy who knows a guy who has a stream, talk to that guy. And then he'll set you up with some really crappy cameras and a terrible microphone set and probably no knowledge of OBS or those streaming softwares. And a lot of it is some grit and learning. And I am the first person to admit, if you've watched any of our content, it's evident. I'm like technologically inept. I'm like an 80-year-old in a 30-year-old's body. And it's just like, not for me. So find people who work with you and help you out. Like Richard Ziegler, tech wizard. I don't know. He's one with the robots. That's why he plays AdMech. Mm-hmm. He does the tech. I'm really good at people. I'm good at talking to people, communicating that thing. I do the people part. And, you know, you find your yins and your yangs and ebbs and flows and try to maximize the things you're good at and minimize the things you're bad at.
Yeah, I totally agree. But it's very comforting to know that, you know, even the greatest started at that point where they glue the camera to a stick.
If you can take one thing away from this entire episode, like just take away that I started this game as a 10-year-old and I was going through school. I didn't know anything about streaming. I didn't know anything about running a company. And I'm still learning. Like, it's all just in 5 years, hopefully this will be a blip of progress, not the culmination.
Yeah. So again, in one of the previous episodes, or maybe it was, we did a blog post about this not so long ago. And then I think 3 years ago, we did an episode with Skari about burnout. And we were together, we were looking for solutions to burnout. One of the things that I mentioned in the episode and the blog post was, if you're bored with the game or burnt out with the game, try something new. One of those things could be a podcast or a website or a blog or something like that. Start content creating just to see whether that is something for you. Maybe this is something refreshing. And as you can see, with the living example that we have here, probably it's going to be difficult at the beginning, but with the perseverance, the right spirit and so on and so on, you could achieve amazing things. So let that be one of the takeaways of the episode. Thanks, Nick, for that. But let's move on with the questions, because there are, at least for me, there's a plethora of other interesting things that
keep on firing, Tom.
That need to be uncovered. So tell me, one of the things that that is clear on the podcast and in the videos, you have a bunch of sponsors that support you, and so on and so on. So how did you go about getting those sponsors? Did you actively search for them, or did they come to you because they spotted an opportunity? You know, with a talented person has a channel. Let's give him, you know, gear and stuff to promote in like a mutual beneficial system. How did that happen?
It kind of depends on which sponsor we're talking about. In the very beginning, we had only like four sponsors that come to mind. This is for Art of War. We had Army Painter, Table War, Orb Fire Minis, and Big Bear 3D. So I'll kind of walk you through how we got each of those sponsors, because hopefully that'll answer your question. Mm-hmm. In the case of Table War, it's owned by my buddy Doug. My buddy Doug, I met at a Warhammer tournament in like 2012. Me and him have been friends. We've shared drinks. We never thought about being business partners. I'm, at the time, was relatively a kid. He's a full-grown adult. As I got older, you leverage the roots that you have when you start this kind of business. And it doesn't have to be Warhammer. It could be literally any type of entrepreneurial adventure. Every resource you got, every connection, it becomes a lifeline. So I reached out to Doug and I was like, hey, you sell Warhammer accessories. Could you help me out? Dude runs a big company. He's like, yeah, I'll send you a few mats. And that's all the sponsorship was. But over as we grow, now our relationship grows. Army Painter, that was a company that saw me as an opportunity because I was like grinding. And, you know, they took a chance and invested in me as a startup content creator. And our relationship has only grown since then as well. You got to do right by your startup people, especially when they're willing to invest in you, work the extra mile. Mm-hmm. I flew to Admiral Bromwood's house. He's like one of the faces of Army Painter. And we did a 3-day paint a 2,500 point orc army challenge. I built and painted 20 and based 2,500 points of orcs in 3 days.
I remember.
That nearly killed me. I almost died, but we got it done. And that really, they made so much content out of it. It was awesome. And then our other sponsors, Warpfire and Big Bear, were actually sponsors that Richard got in. And the way Richard knew them is not dissimilar. Guys he had met through his time playing in Warhammer tournaments and meeting his local scene. And then the guy who runs Big Bear's name is John. The guy who runs Warpfire's name is Justin. They basically were running their startups. Like Warpfire was a startup. Big Bear was a startup around the same time Art of War was a startup. So they were like, yeah, we can send you some models at a discount. We can send you some terrain for free. You promote us. And what is essentially a very little cost sponsorship can grow. You don't have to start big.
Totally agree with that. So let's go into the topic of coaching, because I guess that is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess that is the essence of what you offer.
So in a way, yes, mm-hmm. And in a way, no. I think we've really transitioned, and we're trying to transition away from like formal coaching where it's like one-on-one. You call me up on the phone, I'll teach you how to move your models. I've done that. I've done that for years and years and years. I still do that. But that's, like I said, not the most time scalable model and not the best way to affect the most amount of people. So what we've really tried doing is focusing on the War Room, which is our subscription-based service. We have tons of content in there where we do coaching games, where the coaches really not only play top-tier armies at a high level of professional Warhammer, but they explain everything they're doing, why they're doing it. They talk about the scoreboard. They'd explain the tactics that they're using when they pull off their intricate combats. It's all very out there. And then we take those games and we truncate them down in like 45-minute clips where we break them down and talk about the moves on a more strategic scale level. And then we also do 10-minute tips where we teach you like little tactics, strategy sessions, advanced strategy sessions, know thy enemy to learn about the different factions, podcasts, all this stuff that you can get access to. So we really try to sell you just knowledge in general about how to get better and enjoy your game more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But if I wanted to get coaching from you guys, it is still possible, right? I can still...
Yeah, absolutely. You could. Mm-hmm.
So how does that work? Like, can I just come and say, hey, here's a suitcase of money. Give me Siegler. how do you go about, you know, choosing who's going to coach? Or are we just talking like, oh, I have taken someone last week, then you take the new guy? Or is it like, is there a structure to it?
And there's then absolutely a structure, mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically you go to our website, theartofwar40k.com, and you click the coaching section, and it'll let you read about all of the different coaches we have. So like Richard Siegler and myself, John, Jack, but then all of our other ITC coaches you may not know about, like Scari, Anthony Vanilla, Matt Robertson, Matt Morisali, et cetera. And we're constantly trying to find new coaches that can uphold the values of Art of War, mm-hmm. and also provide the knowledge and the expertise. So we just brought on Alex from Australia as well. Anyways, you can read about each player's play style. You can learn like, all right, Anthony's very aggressive. He likes combat armies. John likes to shoot people. You know, John's an Imperial guy. Matt Morsoli's a Dark Eldar player. And you can really find and narrow the right coach for you. You can go by play style. I like to play toolbox style armies. One of our very successful coaching clients, Cass, he made it to the finals of the GW series last year in just a year of coaching. And he came to me as an Ultramarine player. He's pretty fluffy, narrative-based Ultramarine player, nothing special competitively. And he was like, I really want to play Gullman. He's my boy. I want to play Ultramarines, make my army look like a battle force, make me better at Warhammer. And it wasn't the goal of let me win super majors. I just taught him how to get better at Warhammer from my perspective. Mm-hmm. And over the course of a year, he started going, competing for best overalls at Games Workshop Opens and eventually winning one. So it's more about teaching you the 40K as a skill, as opposed to how to net list or how to meta chase or any of that stuff. Like that, you can do that. It might boost your win rate for a time, but I want to make you better at Warhammer is my goal.
Okay. So I need to ask about this again. This is based on one of the episodes. I can't remember which of the shows that was, and I can't exactly remember who you were. It was one of your friends from perhaps Germany or another country, where you discussed his approach to games, playing aggressive versus playing passive and so on and so on, or defensive. And in one, or like an answer to one of the questions that was asked during the interview, he said that he used to be a client of yours, and that Art of War teaches this more sort of defensive approach. Or if I hope I remember this correctly.
Yeah, I think I got what you're describing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm using this as a foundation for my question. So are all the coaches within Art of War, or do they represent sort of, as you said, the same values and so on? So would that defensive approach really be something that the Art of War is representing? Or is every single coach different, and you know, whoever you get assigned to or whoever works with you, whoever you choose, will give you his more personalized, bespoke, sort of tailor-made approach?
So it's a great question. In that case, the podcast guest we had on was one of my coaching clients, and we spent the better part of a year teaching him 40K. I view things from a more defensive mindset. I'm a defensive player. I would describe myself as such. So that's probably why he made that comment on the podcast. In reference to your question, so after you read about the coaches on the website, you can then select which one jives with you personally. So you might, if you want to play defensively, pick me. If you want to play aggressively, you might pick Anthony, just to be very simplistic about it. And you can switch between the coaches as long as they're available. Their availability is going to depend on their time. You know, do they want to take on more clients? Are they able to take on more clients? I had a point in my life where I had 40 plus coaching clients. I can tell you that is just too many. No one has that much time. But there is a sweet spot where you can really good value for the coaching. And that goes both ways. The coach is getting good value and the client is getting a lot of great attention. So it's important not to mess that up. So one of your questions earlier was, can you just come up with a big bucket of money and ask Richard Siegler for coaching? At this point in time, no, Richard's not available. I'm sure if you send him a private email and said, here's 10 grand for an hour of your time, he'll probably say yes. But like on the typical, I would say no. But most of our coaches are available right now, and they have a variety of different tactics. You can get aggressive, defensive, whatever it might be. You can learn about specific factions. And this is all very personalized. We tailor the model to what you want. If someone said, I want to play 40K and I'm an aggressive player, I've worked with that person before. You know, despite it not being my nature, I understand the concepts that aggressive 40K play uses. So I would teach that. But it depends what your goals actually are.
Okay. So you've mentioned that, you know, you're transitioning, so to say, from coaching as a concept to more the war room with videos available to anyone who wants to pay, you know, an amount of money to have access to like a broader, let's call it collection of videos to the podcast and so on and so on. But in today's, it looks like you are sort of ahead of the curve, because many people, like Innes in the previous episode, like Anthony, like Typhus from the Polish national team, they are just entering the world of coaching. They are taking up offering coaching services for singles and teams. You are already at the next step. You've been doing this for a while. Now you're transitioning to something else. But today's, let's call it, how do we call it? Today's 40K community, today's 40K scene is so developed. There is so much content. Like, even a guy in Poland has a podcast, you know what I mean? So do you find that with the war room, you need to compete for audience, for viewership, for following, for sponsorship? or are you at that stage that you're, you know, comfortable with this concept?
We're definitely, I don't want to mislead you by saying we're comfortable. Comfortability quickly leads to complacency and then your business gets destroyed. I would say that we are always, I'm not too concerned with my competition and not from a matter of disrespect. Like Vanguard Tactics is a business, they do coaching and I often view their stuff so I can learn about how they're doing things, how they view things. Same with Glasshammer, same with other coaching businesses that exist in Warhammer. Mm-hmm. Other content creators that aren't even in our sphere. You know, I'm looking at Tabletop Tactics, Tabletop Titans, meaning Wargaming. These are more narrative-focused channels, but how do they do stuff versus how do we do stuff? You can always learn from everybody, and that's where I pay attention to, in air quotes, competition here. But no, ultimately, what I focus on as a business leader and what I've learned from studying other businesses that are really successful, like Apple and Google, focus a lot less on beating your competition and focus a lot more on producing the best thing you can produce, the best product, the best service, and doing it the best way you can in the most accessible way you can so people can actually afford to use it. And then assuming you're not useless at distribution and marketing, your product will sell itself.
So, yeah, this leads me to my next question. Like, what makes you stand out on the market? Like, there, as you mentioned all the services, there are multiple other smaller let's call them companies as well that offer similar or maybe even identical services. Is accessibility your main selling point, or is it something else?
I think it depends. It's like anything with salesmanship is like you meet your buyer, right? So not everybody is going to be hooked on the same value proposition. Some people might love to consume competitive content about Warhammer, and this is in their opinion a great place to find it, and in my opinion as well, it's a great place to find it. Where else are you going to find the best players in the world smashing each other every week three times over? But then some people might specifically want Richard Siegler's knowledge about Tau. They don't care about the rest of it. They just want the knowledge about Tau. Some people just want to be entertained. Some people really like the Discord aspect. You know, there's different value propositions for each person. So mm-hmm. I don't think there's any one thing that we focus on. The real thing overall is we focus on our mission statement, which is essentially to help people at all levels of the game get better. So we're working on becoming more accessible to newer players, especially as 10th edition gets out there. People who don't have access to as much, being able to play some of the best players out there, you can still learn about the game. And we really focus on just helping people, teaching people, that kind of thing.
Okay. So, and I think I find it an obligation to ask that question, but feel free to refuse to answer. But how did you arrive at the prices that you have right now? So you said that at the beginning, you know, when you were doing like list consultancy and so on, you started with this price and it grew and it grew and it grew because people wanted to pay more. Now you have this company that offers some sort of content. Is the price dictated by, again, the competition? Is it dictated by your skill, your experience, and all the other things that you represent? Or is there more to it?
So it's a few different factors. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to position ourselves as very knowledgeable. We want you to feel like you're getting a very valuable item when you pay for it. So we don't want to be like a $5 subscription model that just tries to hit you with quantity. We really try to hit you with quality. Mm-hmm. So maybe quantity of quality. But in any case, to make it a little bit more narrative, when I was fumbling through the Brown Magic days in 2018, I ran into another company, Knights of the Game Table, and I did some contract work for them as a 40K content creator. And their business owner, Adam Lyons, he taught me a lot about business. For better or worse, he's a very successful businessman. We parted our ways, but he suggested different pricing models. He told me I was very undervaluing myself and my services. So he suggested, I was contracted with him, $97 for coaching and $37 for his subscription-based Knights of the Game Table Pro, which is essentially, in essence, the same business model as the War Room. Mm-hmm. And then as we left Knights of the Game Table and started Art of War, I took a lot of those similar principles. Why it ends in a 7 is just like how people recognize it's kind of like selling something at $99, just, you know, $2 even less than that. as opposed to selling it for 100. 97 for coaching, we still found over time is too cheap, essentially. So we raised our prices even further, and now we get coaching for $177. Warham at 37, we actually lowered it down to 27 because I thought 37 was too inaccessible for people. I wanted to make it a little more something people could actually afford to buy.
Mm-hmm. So what do those prices buy you now?
So if you buy coaching at 177, you could buy, that's regular coaching, or you could buy premium coaching at 277. That's per month for whichever coach you sign up for. And that'll get you one call per week. Call is going to be 1 hour long. And you get like list help, messaging, emails back and forth that way. Mm-hmm. And then if you go for the premium, you basically get video content as well. So you'll be able to have a coach physically show you like on a table where they move their models for specific scenarios and things where you can talk, show them pictures of your games and stuff like that. And then in the war room, that's where you get access to about 15 hours per week of high quality content on specific factions, coaching games, and that kind of thing that I mentioned earlier.
Okay. That sounds like a hefty business model that you have. It's evolved over time.
It didn't start so robust.
Absolutely. I understand that. So, okay. So tell me this, because you've mentioned that at some point during the discussion that there is pressure. I understand, or I imagine that there are, you know, different kinds of pressure that you face every day. One of them could be because you're an accomplished player. So there is an expectation and, you know, unspoken expectation that you will go and you win. And that probably applies to every single member of the team. There is the pressure because you have built a following. That following also wants to see you succeed. There is a pressure, I understand, from your sponsors, probably, because they probably also want to see you win because, you know, they want to sponsor the best. Am I right with this? And then if I am, how do you deal with that pressure? Do you deal with it alone as Nick Nanavati, or do you, I don't know, you have gatherings in the Art of War house and you somehow do something to offload that pressure? How do you deal with all of this?
It's a really great question. It definitely, when I was younger, hit me a lot harder. I felt the pressure. It becomes very heavy with like all the different people out there and companies out there, and your livelihood is tied to how good you are and your performance rate at a game. You know, it's very toxic in a lot of ways. And a lot of our coaches have dealt with this in some way or another through the course of their careers as well. Something I take super seriously because I know how big of a weight and burden it can be upon you. So one of the things I make sure I'm super clear about everyone as they join the team, and I talked about how values and all that is super important to us, is that I emphasize that I would rather them I'd rather them lose a clean game than win a dirty one, is how I phrase it. Meaning, if you could win a game, but pull a shady move, bully somebody, do a gotcha, anything that doesn't make it nice and pretty, just take the loss. It's worth it in the long run. And that mindset, I think, really helps people understand the prioritization. It's like, I will literally rather you lose than bring a scandal to my doorstep.
Yeah, but it's really hard to get into that mindset, I imagine.
It is. And all it is, honestly, it's not an alone thing. It's when one of my teammates loses and they're feeling really crappy about it, I help them. You know, like, I'm like, it's okay, buddy. Like, it's no pressure. It's not disappointment. It's not anger. It's not you're going to get fired. It's not you're making no bonus this month. It's going to be fine. You did the right thing.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot more to dig into that. So, because you also, I've seen you at WTC. I've seen you do like video coverage and so on and so on. That's a whole like different amount of pressure, I imagine, because this is, again, a team was working towards a common goal for the greater good, we could say. So I understand that over the, while being there, you also needed to help the team to, you know, keep the spirits high and so on. Do you have any advice to people that might be listening, you know, how to keep the high spirits?
Honestly, so much of it is actually working on yourself as a person, as opposed to like just generic advice. Like, I would say practice like some breathing exercises, honestly, when you feel bad. Like, it really helps. Breathe deep, breathe in, breathe out. Calms me down. I try to meditate. I try to practice gratitude. Like, when you look at all the things I have surrounding me in terms of a team that's the best Warhammer team in the world, I have Warhammer as a job. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm recording a podcast and calling it advertising. So this is just what I get to do. You got to be thankful for all that stuff. And I'm sure not everyone is in this position, but there are things in your life that you can be thankful for. So if you make a habit of remembering that, focusing on calming yourself down, you can remember that in the grand scheme of things, the 6 ones you rolled to lose the game is really okay.
Okay, that's a great piece of advice. And now a topic related to that somehow, and you asked for it, so I'm going to give it to you. You said at some point that probably we are going to touch upon burnout. How do you stay away from it? Because, again, you've been doing this for multiple years. You've been playing this one game for multiple years. You run a business that is stressful, that comes with a certain amount of pressure. You have to deal with, your employees, and I'm a manager myself. I know that at times this is also challenging. Working with people can also be extremely challenging and can wear you down or wear you out or whatever the phrasal verb is. Have you experienced burnout? And if yes, how did you overcome it?
Yeah, I have multiple times. And burnout happens in different ways for me, I'd say. The most easy and recognizable way to burn out in this job is definitely the 40K side. Like, when you play 40K as your hobby for years and years and years, and then you start playing games for work, and then you have to write articles about those games, then make YouTube videos about those games, and someone has a list you need to write for a totally different faction you're uninterested in, it gets bad. It can get brutal. And ultimately, I think back to my days at Revlon, where I would sit at a desk and sit on Excel for 8 hours a day. And I'm like, what am I complaining about? I get to talk about Warhammer on my afternoon. I make my own schedule. I am my own boss. Like, let's deal with burnout and look at it for what it is. Like, try to do less of the things that don't make you want to do it. But understand that, like, sometimes you just gotta grind. The other element to it, I would say, though, is be well-rounded. Don't just do Warhammer or whatever it is that you're trying to pursue. Like, I have a dog now. I exercise daily, go on a lot of nature walks. Like I said, I try to meditate, try to read, try to watch some TV, be social. I, like, really make a point of having an identity outside of Warhammer. So I have other aspects of my life I can lean into when I don't feel like doing Warhammer.
And yeah, I attest to that, because I do exactly the same. I walk a lot. Like, I noticed at some point that, I don't have enough physical movement and so on. So I started doing the 10,000 steps a day thing. I now have 2 dogs that motivate me even more to do that. So I completely signed my name under what you just said, which is great. And again, great piece of advice. So what has your biggest discovery been since you've started doing this professionally? Like, it's a loaded question. So I understand if you don't have one clear.
Well, I want to think on it, because that's such an interesting question. Can you ask me something else while I put that on the back burner?
Yeah, sure. I mean, okay. So maybe let's focus on what this hobby has given you. Like, again, this is, so yesterday I think I saw a video by Mini Wargaming Dave, where he talks about going to Adepticon, and he spoke about, like, it's a long video, but it's a great one where he, like,
yeah, I actually watched the whole thing.
Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. To those who don't know, go and watch it. Like, find it on YouTube. It's a fantastic video.
It's on Mini Wargaming. It's a whole emotional piece about what Warhammer means to him. It's awesome.
Yes, and like, how it helped him deal with his problems, how he met, hundreds if not thousands of people who motivate him every day, and so on and so on. So in the spirit of that video, Nick, like, if you were to make a video like this yourself.
Honestly, that video really inspired me to consider it. I would
exactly.
say,
let's think what
for
you
me
can put
personally,
in there.
Warhammer has given me so much. Like, I'm not a tattoo guy. I have no tattoos, but if I did get a tattoo, I feel like it had to be a Warhammer 2 tattoo for what it's been in my life. What I thought was just going to be a game, right? Like, I got into it the same way everyone else gets into it. It's just like a game or some cool models or whatever. It's given me a sense of community. I've grown up with it. I've really made lifelong friends through it at this point, business relationships through it. One of my best friends, I introduced him to his wife through Warhammer. Like, it's so intertwined with my existence at this point. I think what it's given me is like a sense of purpose and fulfillment. Like, I truly love what I do. I love the community. I love helping this game grow because it's given so much to me in terms of my life and my happiness that I want to share that with as much as I can and really help it get out there. And I'm doing what I can, like with my commentary job and Art of War, to try to grow it. And then in terms of what I find most surprising, I think you actually brought me back to it, is probably just like finding myself through a game. Like, really, like, it's, I've learned like through years of playing that every now and then I'll like play a great game of Warhammer with somebody. Like, I just had this experience with Matt Morisoli when he came over to America and we played in the top 8 of LVO. He won by like 2 points or something. It was a nail biter of a game. We both played demons. It was wild. Mm-hmm. And it almost was like we communicated on a different language through our movements in over a Warhammer game. Like, I can't describe it to you. And a similar experience with Richard Siegler, Brad Chester, Ben Moley, some other great players that I played internationally. It's few and far between, but it really, it's like you resonate on a different level. It's very strange.
I think I know what you mean. I mean, it's more like on a spiritual level than any other.
It might even be like a spiritual thing. Like, how else do I consider moving across the country for a dude I just met over a game of Warhammer? We had more than a game of Warhammer. I don't really understand it, so I find it very surprising.
But it's also, in a way, motivating. Like,
it's so interesting. Like, I feel very close to people I played once in a game of Warhammer because of that experience.
And then, yeah, I guess this is a theme that is repeated, across like all the players that I speak to, be it from the Polish national team or anyone else. The people who talk about like team tournaments and that they value team tournaments over singles events, it's for the camaraderie, for meeting as many people as possible in one go or in one during one journey. The WTC is just something out of this world that everyone wants to go, not for even for the game itself, but for the community, for the people over there and so on. So I think I know more than less what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's fairly abstract, but I think you get it. It's really just, it's a social game. It's a community thing.
Yeah. So maybe now this helps you to answer that previous question. Like, what's your biggest eureka moment in the history of your company? And it doesn't have to be about Warhammer 40K. It could be about, I don't know, interpersonal relations or teaching people. Maybe, you realize something while teaching people that you haven't realized before.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a single moment that I can like look to and be like, I can't believe this happened. I mean, there's like a few. Like, the first time I won ITC, I really was like, wow, I did it. Or like the first time we won best teams, or the third time we won best teams, like, yeah, that's a dynasty. You know, like, all those are really awesome milestones, and I can think back to many. But it's the process, it's the journey. And that sounds kind of cheesy, but like, it's not about where you end up. Like, I can look back 5 years ago and check a box my goals that I've hit, but like, for me, the whole experience, the doing it, the hard late nights, the waking up at 3 a.m to record a video, the easy days when I'm like lounging on a beach and feeling guilty about it, like, they all add up to the journey. And that is what I've found super fulfilling and inspiring, and most surprising is how much I'm really enjoying the process.
It's nice to hear. So as we talked, as we mentioned, the community has evolved immensely over the years. The content out there has also evolved immensely, and now the game itself is evolving immensely as well. Like, this weekend we saw Warhammer Fest, the previews of the new box set, the previews of the new edition, new rules, and so on. Do you think that it's going to take you a lot of prep and, it's going to take a long time to get adjusted to the 10th edition? Or are you already maybe crunching the new rules and getting prepped for whatever may come?
I'm definitely not already crunching the game. I don't have it or anything, but I don't think it'll take too long. You know, I've been playing since 4th edition. This is my 6th edition change. From what I can tell so far, Warhammer is still Warhammer. It's not like it's a brand new game all of a sudden. So, like, it'll take a learning curve. But compared to people who don't do it professionally and surround themselves with a team of some of the best minds in the game to have high-level 40K conversations over the dinner table, like, how was your day? You know, that they're not going to have the same level of time put into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think about the WTC? Because I understand Team America is going. And WTC is probably going to be playing the 10th edition already. But it doesn't seem like there's going to be a whole lot of time for preparation.
Yeah, this typically happens, actually. So, like, WTC, or when it was formerly known as ETC, on the 40K side, is it always happens in August, right? So then the editions typically launch June, July, in that time frame. So they've done it in the past where it's the same edition and no one's really excited about going to it. So they keep doing it, and I agree with this decision, as if it's the new edition. But then this creates the whole Wild West appeal where it's like, I have no idea what's good or what's bad. Some things will be obviously broken or obviously strong. Pretty much all the teams will identify that. But it's a team of 8. So after you pick the 3 or 4 things that everyone figured out, it's going to get really wild and really interesting. So I'm a little bummed I'm not going this year. It's a bit of a business priorities decision. But hopefully I'll be back in the future. And I'm really excited about that because WTC is my favorite event every year.
It's fingers crossed that that happens. But this leads me to probably one of the last questions of the interview. And again, WTC is something that you don't play on a daily basis. And I say it with full confidence because I think you are more used to, you know, player place terrain, because that's what the LVO does. You have different terrain sets, maybe a little bit modified rule sets. Now, let's say that you get a client from Europe who is not really used to what you play over there, over the ocean. And he comes to you asking for coaching, but based on, I don't know, UKTC rules or WTC rules. How do you go about it? Like, are you well-versed, or are any of you well-versed with it? Is it your bread and butter, or is it something that you would have to yourself firstly read up on to be able to provide coaching on that?
It depends on which coach you get. Some coaches don't really go past their own specific region, but most of our coaches at this point have been to WTC and play obviously within their own country. So, you know, if you want specifically some Australian terrain format that I've never heard of, maybe go for one of our Australian coaches or vice versa. But the main formats, and I'll classify them as UKTC, WTC, Games Workshop, Frontlines Player Placed, you know, all of those, I as well as Richard, Jack, John, we're all really familiar with, even though we don't play them as our local tournament scene. We rotate through all of them for our content so we can try to appeal to all the different regions. Because we understand if we only play Games Workshop terrain, it's only going to be valuable to people who play on that. So we try to divvy it up. And then, like I said, like the entire Art of War crew, I think every single member on Art of War was at WTC last year, so on various teams. So we all have played on the terrain. We all know pretty well. And to your exact example, like in the first coaching call I ever have with somebody, no matter who it is, I get to know them really personally. I get to know where they play, what formats they play, how new they are to the game, how experienced they are, what armies, etc. So if you tell me I only play UKTC, we're going to adjust everything to UKTC. It should be relatively simple.
Okay, that's good to hear, and I think that's the best advertisement. And I think we're at the point of the interview when, I mean, the whole interview is pretty much one big advertisement for what you do, but maybe there is any kind of wording or any kind of way that you want to put it yourself. So I think now is the time, Nick. Sell your product.
I do appreciate the opportunity, Tom. Like we've been covering, you know, Art of War is just solely focused on helping people get better. You can check us out on our YouTube channel. It's AOW40K. You just check it out. You search for Art of War 40K. You'll see battle reports. You'll see tier lists. You'll see Fix My List videos, all kinds of stuff. 10th edition's all over the place in terms of every time they release something, we're on top of it. You can check out our website, theartofwar40k.com. That's where you can get the coaching. You can find out about the war room and what you actually get behind that subscription service. if you have any questions, shoot us an email, shoot us a message. We're always happy to talk to you about it. We're really, this is a project of passion. If it hasn't become clear, I don't know how to sell that anymore. It's just true. I love this hobby. I love this community. I want to help it grow. So if you're interested in helping yourself get better at Warhammer, definitely check us out, Art of War.
Yep. One thing that I have to add, and I see this in all the people that I think are deserving of the name pro, is that they have extreme passion for the game. And it's not only for winning. It's not winning at all cost. It's just passion for the game, passion for understanding the rules, understanding the play styles, having this, as you said, universal sort of kind of knowledge, which makes transitioning between editions easier, because certain play styles, certain approaches do not change. Rules change, but those approaches and concepts, general concepts, don't change. And I guess this what makes you stand out, and what makes your offering also outstanding, is that approach to gaming. And I'm amazed when I listen to it.
Thank you so much, Tom. It really means a lot. Hopefully the audience will feel the same way.
Yeah, exactly. So to all our listeners, I am out of questions right now. If you have any questions to myself or to Nick, drop them in the comment section. I'll try to gather them, if there is anything to gather, and relay them to Nick. Hopefully, Nick, you'll be able to provide answers to them.
If you do,
then maybe I'll make a blog post out of it, and I'll let all the listeners know that there is some extra content on the blog that people can read about. So make sure that you drop your questions, if we haven't answered them already, in the comment section, or you know, contact me. I'm on Facebook as Tomek D, so D-E-E. Or you can message Contact Lost on Facebook, or send an email to us at 3citycontactlost@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to answer all the questions or relay them to Nick. Nick, with that, I thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's been very, as I said, comprehensive, very insightful. Good luck with your future endeavors, because you're doing an amazing job, man.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Tom. And good luck with Contact Lost. I've seen you guys posting a lot. I'm rooting for you.
Thank you. That means a lot as well. All right. And to all of our listeners, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Next episode next week, hopefully live, hopefully with Joker, we are going to be interviewing someone that we've mentioned in this episode. So Ridvan Martinez, also known as Skari from Skardcast. And we're going to go through a similar topic: his 40k job, his motivation for the job, his beginning, his career, how it's developing, what the future holds, etc., etc. If you find this interesting, please join us probably on Monday. We'll try to do a live on Monday. If live doesn't work for whatever reason, we will post probably on Tuesday. So expect an episode on Spotify, on YouTube, all the other podcasting media. And make sure that you drop us a question, drop a comment, like, subscribe, hit the alert button, and we will try to deliver the best content. Thanks, everyone. And until next time, bye-bye.